Thanks for listening to Casualty Friday on the Fangoria Podcast Network. We're back for season two, and we're ready to rock your Friday. I'm Tiffany Shepis, and before we get into the episode, I want to tell you about Fangoria Magazine. Fangoria Magazine is better than ever. Each issue includes set visits from the newest movies, both the blockbusters and the indies, deep dives into your favorite flicks from all the decades, and, of course, the signature insight that you've come to expect from the world's best horror and cult film magazine. Subscribe today and get a new Fangoria sent straight to your door every 3 months. And once you finally open up that envelope, you'll also find that Fango is now a beautiful, deluxe, 100-page deep dive into horror. You'll never find these articles online. It's print only, just like the good old days. Go to Fangoria.com and use the promo code FRIDAY for 15% off your first year of Fango. That's Fangoria.com. And I want to tell you about Tom Savini's special makeup effects program at the Douglas Education Center. Chances are you're not the average movie lover. You are deeply drawn to how the magic in movies happens. If you're someone who loves breaking down how special effects work and how monsters come to life on screen, join the students at Tom Savini's special makeup effects program. In this 16-month hands-on program, you'll learn every aspect of the industry and walk away with a degree. Graduates work on just about every big film and TV show out there. Everything from the Avengers series, Stranger Things, Guardians of the Galaxy, Walking Dead, Westworld, Deadpool, Star Trek, The Conjuring, Captain America, X-Men, It, Darkest Hour, and Lost in Space. And the list, dude, it goes on and on. Graduates are also working in dental labs, theaters, the haunt industry, the toy industry, as well as medical prosthetics. For more information, go to dec.edu.
Fangoria presents Casualty Friday.
You're listening to Casualty Friday on the Fangoria Podcast Network. I'm Kane Hodder.
I'm Felissa Rose.
And I'm Tiffany Shepis.
And today's topic is called The Minor League. How far is too far to go in a movie? Is there such a thing? Is anything off limits?
Plenty of things, but we have a very special episode here on the Fangoria Podcast Network. We have our first guest, Danielle Harris.
Yeah.
Thanks, guys. I love the accent. Harris.
Harris.
It's Danielle Harris.
The Jersey, New York it is, thing
It's
going.
A new thing for Casualty Friday to have a guest on our show.
We've never done it.
We've never had a guest. This is super exciting. And we thought you'd be perfect for our topic, which is called The Minor League. Because you did start making movies extremely young.
Yes.
Tell us about that. Halloween 4?
It's so weird to have you be asking me questions, by the way. I don't know why it just seems, it's just very odd.
Should I cover my?
No, because I'm looking at you going, why do you want to know about making Halloween? You don't want to know about me making Halloween.
I've
four.
Always been a really big fan of yours, Danielle.
It's just creepy and weird. I'm like, you don't want to know about that. Let's
talk
about
her in general.
Way more interesting.
I don't like looking her in the eyes either.
Nobody likes talking to me. But so let's just talk about something else then. Let's talk about our day.
I want to hear all about it. I want Danielle to tell us everything.
We want to know from the beginning and then get to now.
Yeah. Okay. I was 10 years old. I turned 11 on set. Actually, my goddaughter's 10 and going to be 11. And I just was with her last weekend. And I can't even believe that age I was doing that shit, basically. It's pretty crazy. How old are you when you started?
I was 15.
15.
I was 13.
13. Okay, so you guys.
Quite close.
Yeah.
I was 22.
That wasn't your first. He was 111.
Halloween 4 was my first movie, yeah. What? I was already on a soap opera, so I was already like crying and doing all that, you know.
Which soap?
Before that?
One Life to Live.
But can you guys imagine like Halloween 4, like such a huge franchise being your first movie? I mean, I guess you can. Right? Like your first big movie was...
Well, yeah, but I had done a lot of shitty little ones before that. So.
Yeah, but your first big thing being something that gigantic is a big deal.
Did you know the scope of what you were walking into?
No, I was just... I think I was more excited to go out of state, to go to like... I was filming in Utah and not have to go to school. You know,
that's like what you said, actually. Yeah, when she played Angela, you were like, I was excited.
In eighth grade, I missed the first 2 months.
And I was really excited to be able to order French fries through room service without having to give money because I could just sign my name. I still get excited to order French fries through room service.
So even though she's like, I'm just going to order everything, even though I don't eat it.
Because it doesn't take real money. I can just sign my name. So it's
why we have all those French fries here at the studio.
You were living where?
I was in New York.
Okay.
Yeah. So did you go to an audition? Was there?
Yes. I don't remember the first audition, but I remember the last, the one with Dwight Little, the director, in the room, and he just had me scream, and then I had to read a scene with the opening where Jamie's crying in the window and about Rachel being her sister, her real sister, or whatever. So I think they were like, could she scream? Could she cry? And then that was pretty much it.
So did they let you watch the other movies?
No, we never even talked about it. Whoa. Never came up.
And you hadn't seen them, right?
No, nothing. I think years later I saw the original one. That was it.
That's wild.
When you were at the audition, did you feel like, I got this? Was there a kind of a connection with the director that you just knew? You felt like you got it?
I don't remember. I remember it was between me and this actress, Melissa Joan Hart, who is,
Sabrina,
so it was the two of us were the only ones that were there. So I think I remember, I probably was a little bit cocky as a kid. So I think I was like, oh, I'm going to get this. Like not even thinking about would I really get it or
sure.
not? Like, oh, I'll get this. This is easy. I could cry. And then that was it.
Were you known on One Life to Live?
Not really. I mean, I had known by the crazy fans. Yes. That would stand outside the door and want you to sign your autograph. Like that kind of stuff, which I thought was really cool. But otherwise, no.
That's crazy.
And that Michael was played by George, right?
George, yeah.
And when we moved into the house we live in Calabasas, mm-hmm. George lived right around the corner.
Oh, he did? Really?
For the first less than a year. But I didn't even know that. And I just ran across him. I said, what the hell?
That's random.
He sold his house right after that. But that was pretty strange to have Jason. Yeah.
The celebrity killer block.
Right, if they only knew.
It's
in a beautiful gated community. Yeah. And
that realtor out in the suburbs. Coined that market. I know who I'm going to sell to.
That's the reality of it, though. You've got these crazy psycho fucking serial killers living right next door to you. And you live in this beautiful neighborhood. In a gated, very...
You never know. Crazy
nice
people.
Community. And then your neighbors are... and kill you.
And how did
maybe
you
that's
feel
why he asked him about.
Did you, because I was in New York as well and I had auditioned, but I felt the effects of kind of being in a horror movie. Mm. It was way before. It was 1982 for me.
Right.
So did you feel any of that?
I don't think I had any idea until I got older. Mm-hmm. Even watching it now, I look back and go, I can't believe. But we filmed in Utah, which there were no child labor laws, mm-hmm. right to work state. I remember the teacher on set would just sort of be like, oh, go, you can do whatever. And they were making me do things that they would never allow anyone to do nowadays. Ever.
Oh,
that's
really?
Nuts.
Wow. All the stunt stuff. I mean, I was just with Don Shanks, who was Michael in Halloween uh-huh. 5 this last weekend, and all that stuff with me running in front of the car and in the laundry chute, and I wasn't even hardest in that shoot, and he was stabbing a real knife through there. He just knew his mark of where he had to get it through before. And, there's even the roof. I wasn't harnessed on the roof. I was just hanging on to Ellie Cornell's back, and we were
amazing.
18 feet up. With a slate roof that was April in Utah, frozen over, and some cardboard boxes with grips holding mattresses.
Crazy though about those movies, a movie you did, and a lot of the 80s, 90s movies where there's so much child bullying. Cause I think some of the scariest shit in Halloween 4 is when those kids are your mom is dead.
Right.
Jamie's an orphan. And they're kind of closing in on you as you're running away. And I'm holy
it's
shit.
Mean.
It's back to our mean kids episode.
Right.
That is terrifying. Do you think as a kid actor, and that was happening to you, was there any recollection of this isn't right, or they don't mean it, or did you hold on to any of that?
I was such a 40-year-old trapped in a little body that I was whatever, I'll go to my trailer and they're only here for the day. So there was no
the extras holding.
I'm way nicer to people on set now than when I was a kid, I think.
They're scaled daily players.
Call me whatever you want, extra. How's your cold pizza, fuckers?
But let me ask you, would you ever allow your kids?
No way.
Wow. Hell no.
To
my
what?
Kids to be in the business.
No. So now, why? Because clearly you've come out all right. And we know that that's a rarity.
It's rare.
Right? It's rare to have child actors that were as successful as not messed up. But you also have a great life, though.
I mean, I think that any one? Okay, people always. This is my least favorite question. Is not that not yours? Is did you?
It was Felicia.
Did you know that you always? Did you always know you wanted to be an actress? Right? And it's like I was like 7 when my mom put me in it because she wanted to be an actress or she wanted to have maybe some kind of an extension of what she felt maybe she was lacking. So it became like a look how great my daughter is or isn't my daughter pretty or isn't she look she's famous or you know look at the book of my daughter and all her modeling stuff. So it was never really like, I don't know. I see all these parents that are just schlepping their kids around back then, and I think it's worse now. Like, I started my career in beauty pageants, okay? Can you imagine me?
I was with you.
You know, it's crazy. You're like, would you, could you ever imagine putting your daughter in beauty pageants?
No, never in a
for a bunch of men to judge what she looks like in a bathing suit at, like, really. 6 years Jesus. Old?
Never in a million years.
Fucking disgusting, it's right?
And look at Dance Moms. Look at shows horrible. Like that. I watch them.
It's all about the mothers.
Mind. All about the mom.
Yeah.
I just refuse.
The kids don't know.
Or, like, my mother, like, dragging me around to them, like, you know, taking fucking glamour shots.
Yeah,
like,
it's hard to believe because your mom is so sweet.
You're,
and so,
you're sweet
I mean, Joan, we understand.
The truth is she was a really kind of weird, gross stage mom, right? I mean, mine was. I mean, she's a nice old lady now, but she was not what I would like to be to my kids.
No, my mom likes, my mom surprisingly enough wasn't a stage mom. Like she would stay in my trailer on set and like hang out with the grips and like hang out with all the Teamsters because she like liked them, you know. But my mom was young, shabby when she was 21. So, you know, she was like living vicariously through and wanting to party and wanting to go on set and wanting to like be in that world. Yeah. She wasn't an actress, you know. So I think that, I think it's very selfish of parents to put their kids in the business because they financially I supported my family till I was in my early 20s. Wow. Like that's crazy. My kids will never have that adult responsibility. They never have to worry about taking care of me. I'm totally fine. They will always be taken care of. No matter what I do.
Wow. Yeah. Now, and my sons didn't have any interest in the business either. And
if they did, what would you have said? Any of you, if your kids said, Mommy, I really want to do it, would you be like,
we all talked about this, and we all have, like, little, like, varying degrees of it. Like, Mia was in Tales of Halloween. Like, well, all of us were, right? I think.
I don't know. No, I don't think I'd.
Well, a bunch of us were. Sorry, you guys. she was in Tales of Halloween, but it was because they were friends of ours that were doing it, and I knew everybody was there. It was a safe place. Like, I was there, and she wanted to do it because
but
it was
fun. But
if
that's fun.
Because it was
and
fun.
And you're there, but, like,
and
as
I'd
a
asked
child,
her at
you know?
One point, I was like, would this be ever something you're into? Because, and she knows how I feel about it. Like, I'm like, nah, you should do many other things before you fall back on that, just because I think it's a hard life, personally.
It's a really hard life. I have 3 kids and they've all worked on my own projects that I've produced. So it's sort of a fun hobby, but I don't think any one of them look at it like, oh, this is the career I want.
Well, everyone wants to be famous now, you know, so it's even changed since we were kids. You know, it's like there's people. I was listening to Howard Stern this morning. So people want to be famous because just to be famous. Like there's not like real work behind it. Sure. And also like if you want to be famous, you want to do your own things. Like there's different outlets now that you can be in control of and be creative instead of being forced to be. Like I was taken out of school all the time, and like I lived in New York. I would go on the subway with my babysitter at like 9 years old, and my mom would stay home with my sister and have to audition. Like that sucks. And coming home on the train and, you know, it's hard.
And that's the side of it I think that affects me as a parent, that I'm like, I couldn't have you, Joe Nobody, judging my kid based on looks, based on the way they said something.
The rejection is insane.
You know,
that's a no-no for me. I don't want my kids going into a room, like you're saying, where somebody can judge them and say, no, you're not good enough.
You're not good enough.
And then it kills their self-esteem. Why would we do this? Like,
that I couldn't deal with it, and I couldn't stand by and let someone talk. I mean, now is so different. People, you know, talk to, you know, handle children so much better on sets, and they're
But do they? I mean, we hear a lot of stories now.
I think they're pretty taken care of, don't you?
I mean, there's the children. What is it over at our union? Children in Film or whatever it is, going to be on the board a couple of years ago. There was a bunch of older kid actors now they're like in their 60s that wanted to kind of move on and let the younger generation come in. And really they're specifically there to go to set and talk to the parents about bullying, about saying, listen, when the producer comes up to you, when you say, my kid's tired and doesn't want to work overtime, mm-hmm. you have the right to say, I'm sorry, they have to go to sleep or they have to leave. But uh-huh. most of the time, they're going to make you feel like you could be fired. So yeah. don't let them make you feel like yeah. you have to. Because for me, like my mom would say it to me, but I always felt like, oh God, I can't really say like, I'm tired or I don't want to go to work. Or, you know, even now you're so, I mean, even now as an adult, because I was a kid actor, when I'm sick, or don't feel, I mean, you're with me when I was just sick when we were doing that convention. I was deathly sick all day Saturday at the signing. You would never have known that I went to the emergency room that night. And like,
nobody
it was,
did.
Nobody. I smiled all day long, took pictures all day long, was totally fine because there's something in your brain when you're programmed so young that you just shut off. You know, yeah. we've never missed, none of us have ever missed a day of work. Nope. All I'm sure, you know, you've driven yourself to the hospital mm-hmm. after work. Like, you just do, like, that sucks. I don't want my kids yeah. to ever feel like they can't just be like feel something yeah. or
and I don't think I ever felt like I didn't want my sons to go into the business because I never had to go through the judging process because, you know, first 25 years was just stunts. Mm-hmm. So there's no auditioning.
You're just going right. through it now with us.
Right.
Judging and it's you daily. Horrible.
Way worse than I ever expected. So the way she fucking things. Looks at me, oh.
Because you got jobs based on your qualifications.
Right.
Where we did not get jobs based on our qualifications.
Exactly.
We still don't get jobs based on our qualifications.
Right. And so I didn't really dislike the idea of them going into it, but I was kind of relieved that they didn't want yeah. to. Because I knew they could do better.
Well,
and have, you know, you. I always talk about it, but you, there's no loyalty in this fucking business. I mean, no. The perfect example that I always use is I play a character for 4 films in a row. I'm told I'm doing the next one, given the script, and then I'm replaced. Never even told I was being replaced.
Did you hear about the new Halloweens that they've been making
Did
without me?
Did you hear about our new co-host that we got on Casualty Friday came?
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yep. Sure did.
I would but ironically enough, in our horror world, there's a ton of loyalty in a very small little true. Group.
Sure.
You know, yes. But yes, that's hard to come by.
Yeah. Did you, I mean, I don't know, with my kids, I always felt like I want to place the emphasis on everything other than what people cast you for in movies, which is generally your looks and mm-hmm. how you speak, right? Mm-hmm. And I was like, I want you to be known for many other things. And those things are just automatically inherently there, right? Because I have pretty kids. But like, that you want to have people that are smart and charming and trustworthy and nice, right? And like instill in all sure. this stuff that I feel like the industry often just sort of chisels away, mm-hmm. right? Because
yeah,
like
sure.
as a young kid being there, like did you ever feel like after Halloween and like you're going on other auditions, like, you know, fuck these kids, you know, like I don't care about anybody, like because like the bar was set so high with such a big film that
I think it wasn't that movie. It was like when I did 4 and 5 back to back, basically a year after it. And then it was when I was 12, I think I came out to LA. And the day that I came out to LA, I came for pilot season when there was such a thing, you know. And
did
when
you move here or you just came
I just came out for that okay. for pilot season. Oh, wow. And with my manager at the time from New York, my mom was still home with my sister. And the day that I signed with my agent, I had an audition for Don't Tell Mom the Babysitter's Dead because Jennifer Love Hewitt was cast. But she was not let out of her contract on Kids Incorporated. This is how I'm so dating myself back to the 80s. So they needed to find somebody. So I went in and got the job that day. So it was like, oh, for lunch, can you get in at noon? And I went in and got that. And then that became – then I started getting bigger, big movie after big movie after big movie. I don't even think because of that movie because it hadn't come out yet. But I think back then there was only like maybe 4 or 5 girls that really auditioned for the same roles that looked like me. They were all kind of the same. And then I would – beat them out a lot. So it became like a, oh, she's here. Oh, I got this one. Oh, it's me and so-and-so. Oh, I got that one. Or it'd be, oh God, Sarah Geller. Oh, crap. You know, I don't know if I'm going to get this one. Like, so, you know, so you kind of knew like what I knew what my strengths were and when I probably wasn't going to get the job. So it was, and we just all were kind of friendly with each other. It was the moms that would talk shit to each other.
When you did the second Halloween, mm-hmm. when you were young, did things change? Did you feel different because you were playing a character for the second time, or had you done that before?
I'd never done that before. The only other time I've played someone more than once is in our Hatchet movies, other than Halloween. But I think, I mean, because Halloween 4 was my first movie and I wasn't the star in my mind of that, like Ellie was really more the star of the movie. When I then came on to 5 and I was the only one really there other than Donald, who was just kind of in and out, then I felt like I was kind of like running the show.
Right.
Because I was in almost every scene.
Was it bizarre going back with Rob on the later Halloween?
Kind of a strange thing? Yeah. I felt like I remember saying to Scout in the car, like, I'm passing the torch. Like, it's on you now. You got, like, you're taking over. Not knowing that maybe she wouldn't have been. I really thought, like, oh, she's going to be like how I was. Like, her career is just, boom, going to explode. And they really weren't as receptive to her as I thought that they would be. I don't know. Like, Lori's so, like, in everyone's mind. It's like when people, when JC replaced me in Halloween 6. Like, everyone was like, yeah, no. Yeah, no, Jamie's funny. Jamie, you know, well, Danielle's
you know,
Jamie.
Jamie was super loved, you know, and so going back later and not kind of taking back over, I think,
right?
You know, a few fans were like, what the hell?
Yeah, but, it's true. It's true. And I always feel bad for her because I'm like, she was a friend, you know, and she's great. Like, she got the shit end of the stick having to replace me. But
when you were a kid in the movies, was there anything that was written in the original scripts or anything like that that you're aware of that people were like, nope, can't do it, that's a kid, like, she can't do it, or something that they were like, all right, this scene's gonna be really hard?
The only scene they would not let me do in Halloween 4 was the stabbing of the stepmom. Really? They had my stunt double stab her.
Just because it could be too traumatizing for you, or like, oh,
they put me on a fucking roof, but they wouldn't let me stab my. They're okay if I die, but they didn't want to traumatize me.
That's so weird. I couldn't do any of the kills either. They weren't my hands. They had another. Oh wow, really? Do it.
Maybe like that's one of the rules.
That was one union rule back then.
There's the one rule.
They kids can't kill anybody.
They could be chased.
But you know what? And that brings up a good point. I mean, what do you have? What are the boundaries like? Would you kill the elderly, the handicapped, the
kids?
Like,
is it like fair game when everything's a movie and it's make believe? It doesn't matter. Or is there, now that you're a parent, especially like a especially, and now that you're a parent,
I don't know if I could do a scene where, I mean, even when like I think I was like just pregnant, and then there was a movie or something that I was gonna do where she had to pretend. Yeah, it might have been something you were probably even in, Kane, where she was gonna go into labor or pretending to go or going into labor in the movie, and I was newly pregnant, and I said, I can't do this. I can't, as an actress, be on the floor and be screaming and moaning and pretending to go into early labor when I'm really pregnant. What if your body doesn't know you're acting, you know? Like, what if you're
not?
Like, major trauma.
No, it is.
Like,
it's crazy.
That's hardcore.
2 weeks before I had my son, I did a movie called The Last House, and I was hogtied with duct tape and in a hatchback. I was huge.
What the hell?
And they threw me in there, and I did it. I just said, okay, let me just do it, and let me get out.
Don't you worry that, like, that's going to do something?
Maybe, because it was my third, you know?
Maybe, like, yeah. You're like, oh, fine.
The first one, you're like, oh, the second one, you're like, oh, the third.
Right, right, right.
She's like, this is a good way to give life. I'm like,
it's true. I was ready.
Side note for everyone listening, Felissa
will do anything. No, I won't.
Felissa, Tiffany, and I
yes,
all have the same gynecologist. And this doctor has delivered all three of our babies.
All babies.
All three of us.
This OB.
Little shout out to
that. We love him.
Yes, wow. He has seen all of our vajayjays.
He's the very lucky horror vagina doctor.
Does he have pictures?
Yes, he's actually a very big fan. We all know that it's free.
Free signed stuff.
And it's random.
I actually think he delivered other people that are horrific, the Kardashian babies.
Yes.
Yes.
Really?
Yeah.
God.
The same team.
Same team.
There's just a lot of
bizarre
people going. Isn't that weird? I found him through Felissa.
And then, through Tiff. You were right before me. Mm-hmm.
Isn't that strange, right?
Yeah. So. Very strange.
Yay, we love you.
Dr. Chin.
Dr. Chin.
Dr. Chin?
Yes. So.
Who is he, Bruce Campbell?
Bruce Campbell.
Oh, my God.
Little giant chin.
Bruce Campbell.
Sorry, that was too deep for you. Yeah. I've never killed a child in a movie.
You, would you, or would it be hard? I mean.
I probably would. I mean, I think I'd kill anybody, really.
Yeah.
I don't see why it's worse to kill someone who's disabled than someone who's not.
Little kids love it.
You know what I mean?
fight for themselves.
Yeah, they can't fight back the way a regular size abled person could.
I have seen little kids on movies that are in blood and gory makeup, and they love it. Yeah. They think it's so fun.
I've killed a lot of kids on screen. And I just shot a 14-year-old in a movie, and it was crazy. I kill her parents, and then she's ready to shoot me, so it was do or die, and I had to shoot her. And at first, I did question it. I said, are we sure about this? They said, yes. And I thought, okay. And I turn around and say, big mistake, and I leave. But I also did another movie.
Said big mistake and left the movie, or that's what you do in the movie?
No, in the movie I do that. And I thought, okay, this will work. I think it's fine. To me, it's all entertainment. We have to communicate with our children, explain the craft. Yeah.
Well, also, you're defending yourself, kind of.
And I'm defending myself because she was about to kill me.
But
do we have boundaries, like even with nudity? Have you been naked?
The nudity, like.
Yes.
Boundary-wise, like you said, you couldn't do a pregnant scene, but like killing the kids or animals or anything like that, is that okay?
Or does it just depend on the script? I think it depends on the script.
Yeah,
and
certainly.
If it weirds me out, I mean, there's definitely been things where I'm like, I don't know if I could do that, man.
Yeah.
I don't know.
What
and
is
it has
the worst
changed
thing?
Since I've had kids. I mean, being cut open if I was playing that I was pregnant. I mean, that kind of stuff. I don't know. It's just stuff that's like, I don't really think I'm into doing that.
I really agree, though. It has to be depending on the script because, you know, Jason Takes Manhattan, the famous story, I was supposed to kick a dog.
Yeah.
And I said, no, it wasn't because I'm a big animal rights person. It just wasn't in character.
Does it make sense
for Jason to kick a dog? Yeah. He wouldn't do it. So that's why I refused. But you know, depending on what the character is, I guess I'd kill.
Yeah, anyone. I mean, like, I had to kill a puppy in a movie called Cyrus.
Was I in that?
Yeah,
I am. Yeah.
That's right.
That was
so. Yeah, she's in that, and Lance Henriksen's in it, and I play the mom of Cyrus, who's the serial killer.
Right.
I think you were a reporter or something.
Yeah,
right? Yeah. And see how much we watch these movies after the fact. I'm like, I think you're in that. But I play this horrible mom in just these flashbacks, and it's like why this kid. It's kind of like our nature versus nurture conversation before. Like, and this was purely nurture. Like, she was just a terrible lady who. Like, you know, had sex with dudes in front of the kid and then like got him a little puppy. And when the puppy peed on something, she's like, you know what happened? You know, the best kind of dogs are dead ones, and snapped its neck. And just like this horrible, horrible mom. Right. Oh. And this guy ends up growing up and, you know, snaps bitches' necks. So it's it was terrible. But for that particular reason, I felt okay with all of it. You know, it was like there was a little kid in the scene and he was a little traumatized, but we had to have, like, we talked about it beforehand. I'm like, look, it's fake. It's not real. You're okay. I'm going to say bad things to you, but I think you're awesome. And, you know, you can say anything you want to me. Like, I think if you have, like, a trust and you're not a major douchebag in real life, like, you can do those scenes with
That was one kids. Of those movies where I thought that they were going to kill me, like, going to location. Remember we talked about that?
Yeah.
Like, we got picked up and driven, like, 2 hours in a snowstorm, in the middle of nowhere, and you're in a hotel and you haven't really met anyone. And you're like, is this really a movie or
are these, like,
gonna
weird
actually
fans?
Kill me?
Like a weird kidnapping thing. Yeah.
That's crazy. Because even going to conventions, we just get off the plane and
you're just like, get
in a car.
Pick up by like a volunteer who just has a shirt from the convention. It's not like any credential.
Right. Like, they could take you to their basement
I'm
and like act
up. What's up, man?
Hold on, let me get in the car with my kid and all my stuff and like drive me somewhere. Oh, don't think I haven't done it.
That was the whole premise of Old 37. That Mosley and I played brothers that drove a shitty ambulance. We had a scanner. We'd hear 911 calls. We'd go there.
I'm sure that happens.
And nobody who has a loved one in need of attention is going to ask for your ID.
Yeah. Wow.
your credentials. You show it's up true. In a uniform with an ambulance, you take yeah. them away. And we what? Fucking take them away and kill
That's
them.
That's crazy.
You know, it's the same thing.
No, though. Yeah, this is needs to be like a, one of those warnings on the podcast. Do like, do not try this at home.
Yeah. Well, also now we're all like, you know, volunteers out there. Ideas. Sorry, you have to come with license, ID, birth certificate, fingerprint clearance. It's
fucking Adam well, like Green's going to do a movie about it now.
It's true, though. I mean, in the
starring none of us.
In the 80s, no, they said, for... don't give anyone your phone number. The 90s, you don't get into anyone's car. Now we give everyone our phone number and we get in their car.
And access yeah. to it's all like, of your friends and your contacts. And everything else, yeah.
We just jump yeah. into any Uber that shows up. They just have a little sticker. That's we're like, right. it must be
just
mine.
Just jump in.
No big deal.
My guy.
But yeah, jumping into cars, naked, not naked. How do you do it?
I did do a nude scene once.
In a car?
No.
You did?
Movie called Dark Wolf.
Hey, no, I had to turn it down. The werewolf movie.
Oh, yes.
That's right. That's
but so I was...
What's your penis, the Dark Wolf?
Not now. It's the groomed
wolf. No, it's just a banana.
You have to shave it?
Rick, you know, yeah. everybody knows Rick. He was the werewolf, but okay. I was the human version. Every time the werewolf would transform back into human, it was me, which was kind of an interesting role. But then you think it's a werewolf out killing people. When it transitions back, it's not going to be have clothing on.
Oh, right.
So I had to do a scene... naked, walking towards somebody. And it just shows my ass. And I hate to say it, it wasn't my ass.
Who was it? You had a body
a
double?
Stunt ass?
You asked, did you ask for that? They wanted, ass. Got somebody?
They just they assumed never offer.
Why wow, would it really? Just do
they had
it?
Respect for me.
Oh, see,
so that's funny about sure. a stunt ass. I did a movie called Dark Reel, which I was naked in. Surprise! And Eddie Furlong is in it with me, and he was supposed to have this weird, awkward love scene with me, and he originally asked for an ass double.
Oh my god!
And everyone, like, you know, they were like, "All right, we'll get him one," but everyone talked shit and made fun of him, and so like at the very last second, he's like. All right, I'll do it. And it's so it's now Eddie's ass in the movie, but they had to pay us an ass double to be there just in case.
Wow.
So it's kind of weird. Like, why guys not?
Women do. We don't have a body double just in case on set. We freak out. It's we'll shoot your scene that scene first on the first day you go to work. So then if you decide not to bail out, we replace you.
Or so you don't get fat on all the craft service.
Yeah, there you go. That one too.
I've never done nudity. I've always been afraid to be naked in front of, it's my own insecurity. I look at it like it's beautiful and I wish I could do it and maybe.
Just do it right now. I mean, like.
So right now friends. Here on Casualty
Come on,
Friday.
Show us your tits, please. Just out of friendship.
Show us your dick.
Please don't. No. Please don't. The dark werewolf.
Look, it's a stunt dick.
I don't want to throw up before lunch.
Oh,
so, I would have thought that you would. I mean, because you show your boobies and dress,
yeah,
you know, in these,
provocatively,
like,
yeah, like a whore. Yeah, like a whore. It's kind of the opposite.
Right.
It's like you can dress like this, but you are too insecure to.
Have you been asked to be
a couple of times, and we modified what was happening? Yeah. Huh.
I would not even I was so insecure about my body before I was 30 that I wouldn't even audition for something if I had to be in a bathing suit. Wouldn't do it.
Wow.
And then suddenly I turned 30 and like, I don't know what shifted. Something shifted where I was like, fuck it. I don't even care anymore. And now like it's, I don't know. It's just something about the way I think about myself. It's just been like, oh, I don't really
It's freeing.
Care.
I think it's a good thing.
It's fine.
Yeah.
And
not insecure about it.
Concerned because of some scars that I used to think, well, nobody's ever going to ask me to do anything with my shirt off, so I don't have to worry about that. And sure enough, so many people wanted me to because I guess it adds
well, you're
to the
beefcake. Yeah,
you're the sexy
you're
motherfucker.
The beefy cake.
Make that, you can't make that.
Yeah.
It looked like that, you know?
That, oh shit, now I'm not going to think of the name of the show.
Golden Girls.
Yeah.
One Life to Live. Mork and Mindy.
Okay.
Hunger Games.
Well, it's gone now.
that was Star Trek.
I had to do a fight scene in a prison yard with...
Lou Diamond Phillips. Bruce Lee. George Lopez. Andy Garcia.
Wow, you have the craziest line of...
I used to do the show down in San Diego. Anyway, And the director said, hey, would you do it with your shirt off? And I was like, oh, fuck. You know, and then sure enough, more and more wanted to not have the shirt on.
Oh, really?
So, I don't know. I guess it does look kind of scary, right?
No, I think it looks
cool. I think you always look great.
No, truthfully, I think anyone that has something interesting about them that's just not like everybody else is cool. And it's cool, and it makes you, and it makes you different, and not a weird way, like in a cool way.
Right.
I was just, how is it in front of the crew? I mean, usually they close set, right?
Yeah. So. I mean, I'm not modest, so it doesn't really, people are more weirded out than I've been. Like, they want to cover you up or what. I'm always like, leave me alone. I'm fine. It's fine. Who cares?
That was always the same with me too. Like, it was, they're very prepared. So then you feel kind of like, well, what's the big fuss? Like, right. You're going to see the movie and you're going to see my dicks.
Right. Right.
That's a good point. Yeah.
Have you Googled? I'm sure everyone's Googled anyway. Sure. Like, you already know what they look like. It's not a big deal. Mm. But BJ, who directed
Hatchet
the last, well, two Hatchets ago, was also, was doing camera on Halloween, both Halloweens that I was on. Yeah. So, and I was naked for both of them, actually. So I was already like, he saw me in the first one, you know, like who cares? And then when I had to do the Halloween 2 and I was naked on the floor but covered in blood, and he was like down there in my crotch basically, because then I didn't have bottoms on either, but I was still like had the little cover up. Yeah. I was like, dude, it's fucking BJ. Like, I don't even care. And then in Hatchet 3, naked in the shower.
Oh, right. Yeah. That's right.
That's right.
So then I was like, fuck it. I'm completely naked. I had like a little sliver in the front, but you know, like I didn't really care at that point because everybody had already seen everything anyway. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Yeah. But now after having kids.
Yeah, that's a whole different deal.
Still debating about what to do about the boob situation, but we'll figure it out. If I get my boobs done, then, you know, maybe I'll definitely do it again. But if I don't, I'm probably not going to.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, you look hot, so I mean, you do whatever.
I know. I was going to say,
you blow the back of your boobs in, right? Yours are real.
I have not. Mine's right, but that's also from years of breastfeeding. I think they got bigger.
Breastfeeding makes your boobs big and then, voluptuous, and then
mine are like. I mean, they're big, but like
they do change.
Your whole body changes when you have kids, you know. And like, but on the flip side, like I feel like after having kids, like you sometimes feel. Better. Yeah. Like, you know, you feel like more womanly and more, you know, like,
right? Oh, well, like, holy shit, this all still looks like I'm doing this fairly good for my 40s and popping out two
babies,
two giant children.
I've been saying lately that she looks better than she has even before
she's
kids.
So thank beautiful. You. And always.
Even Susan says the same thing. You look amazing having had she's two also kids recently.
And glowing, because I think what motherhood does is it brings, obviously, life to us. And we feel just completely kind of happy. Elevated, inspired, happy.
Yeah, for sure.
Do you think after having your first child, the choices that you've made career-wise are different?
I haven't really, I think, had any offers for anything that I was like, I mean, I was only like, I did a movie in Scotland over the summer, and that was only like, that was for almost a month actually, and I had to take the baby, but I didn't take my older ones. The only thing I would do would be like, I have to take both my kids now. Mm. I can't go away for that long. It's really, they grow so fast. It really is too long, you know. I have to. Even when I do the conventions, I still take the baby, and I contemplate taking the older one too. But he's 2. Like, I can't. What's he gonna do? Sit in a hotel room? He's gonna lose his freaking mind.
Yeah.
So I can't. Did you ever take your kids to? I mean, what do you do when they were younger and you're working?
I took them everywhere.
You did.
I took them to set. Well, no.
When you were
with the little,
state.
The smallest one, whoever right. I was nursing at the time, I breastfed my little guy for 3 years.
That's so gonna be Jagger, I'm sure.
Was a lot. When he was 12. Yeah.
It was hard.
He's now 34.
He's now 78.
It tastes just like melons. Yeah, I mean, my kids have come to conventions, you know, just, but I have that big age gap. So, you know, Mia's 15, Max is 6. Max is into cool shit like horror movies and whatever. And Mia can watch him if, you know, I need to go somewhere. But
I got to schlep the nanny and then the whole thing.
Yeah,
the
they're little, but like give it a couple years and they'll. You know, it's kind of fun
I
to have them
I still like
around.
It when it they, fun. Like, when, like, Jagger, when he comes, like, when he shows up at the convention and I'm there, it's like a nice break. It's like when you're signing and someone brings a dog or other babies. Like, it kind of breaks you out of that monotony of, like, the same shit person after person after person. You're like, oh, yay, my baby's here.
Yeah.
You think, like, when you, because you just recently were in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, which is, holy crap,
Congratulations.
I loved the movie. And
it was really good.
Did you see what happened to your IMDb number?
No.
You know, our number is usually about the same.
I don't have pro, so oh, I don't know how to check the star meter.
Yeah, when you just
now tis the season too.
Right. Yep. And you go on IMDb Pro and it gives your star meter number, and yours and mine are roughly in the same neighborhood.
Really, he always is tracking this.
I love it.
Oh my goodness. I love that he looks at this.
4,000 or 5,000, 6,000, something like that, somewhere in there. And yours, I think, last time I checked, was at 100.
Wow.
Because of Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
I had it on my fridge for years. I was number 6 one time.
What?
Wow. What movie did you have out?
I don't even know. It was like 15 years ago. I don't even have anything. I think, you know what it was? This is what it was. This is not even a movie. It was back in the day when they were like, update your headshot on IMDb Pro, like this person. And it was my headshot and the link.
Oh.
So everyone was like, and they clicked it. And then it'd be,
That's amazing.
That's
tricky.
Whoa.
That's cheating, man.
Number 6. Yeah,
I did go up to like 10 when Jason X came out for some reason.
Wow. Really?
Yeah.
We should look and see what it is. How do I see the IMDb?
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, that's insane. How did that come about? Because I know that you knew Quentin Tarantino from...
So I knew Quentin from years ago. I guess I'd met him when I was 12 at Greg Nicotero's house, which I had totally forgotten about. And then we ran each other again at Eli Roth's birthday party years ago. And I was like 30, I think. It was before I did the Halloween, the 2007 one. So it was a while ago. And we were at the party, and Quentin thought it would be funny. He's a big guy, you know. And he thought it would be funny to push me in the pool at a party. And
were you so pissed, or was it like,
and you were clothed?
I was fully, it was like 300 people, fancy party. I was in a dress and boots, and I had my bag and all my, I was standing out around, everybody was around the pool outside. And all I heard was him behind me saying, "This isn't a party until Danielle Harris goes in the pool." And he pushed me, but like thinking I wasn't going to actually go in, like just to kind of like scare me. And I went right into the deep end. So into the deep end, underneath the water,
because
he pushed me in. He gave me, like, all he had to do was give me a little bit of a nudge, and I wasn't paying attention. And it was just like, boom, in the pool. And then I just came up out of the water and was like, I mean, I'm a pretty good sport about that stuff. Like, I would never have been. If it was some drunk asshole, it would, well.
It's Quentin Tarantino.
Yeah.
You gotta be a little like.
If he's the drunk asshole, then it's Quentin, and it's totally fine. So long story short, he ended up jumping in with me. So he and I were like in the pool for a while, and it was like this whole thing. And Eli's brother had like photos of us. So he developed a friendship because of that. And because he said, I'm going to replace all the shit that I ruined. Because I was like, my phone, my camera, my bag, my
wallet, shoes.
My shoes. Yes. He offered to buy me shoes. So,
number one.
Yes. So he did actually buy me the only pair of Louboutins I'd ever had, and a pair of Givenchy shoes. And
Quentin Tarantino, if you want to push me in.
Yes. Push us all in.
I got way better shoes. I got this beautiful Louis bag and a wallet. And he was like, we spent the day together, like having lunch and shopping.
That's amazing.
And what was amazing is we were on in Beverly Hills, and people were coming up to him on the street trying to give him scripts.
What?
And he was like walking backwards trying to hand him stuff. And he was like, come on. I'm with my friend, Guys, please get out of here. Like, I'm trying to have a good time with my friend. And they were just like attacking him. I'd never experienced
that. Do you think that was like a planned thing? Like, I want to impress this girl. Let me get some script people to come down Beverly Boulevard, hand her some stuff.
I don't know, maybe. It was so weird.
Oh my gosh.
So weird.
This is so exciting.
So we
took
became
shopping.
Friends, took me shopping, and then we threw a Cinco de Mayo party together. And that's also a funny story.
Wait, why?
Because we were just hanging out all the time. And I'd go to Sastrique Margaritas, and he'd show me movies I'd never seen before. And we'd like, he'd smoke pot, and he'd show me his movies. And I had not seen From Dusk Till Dawn. He was like, what? So he's like, I'll put it on. So we would like literally just became friends. Never hit on me. Was never weird about anything. We would just, he was so geeking out that I was in his house watching movies. And I could not believe that I was in his house watching movies.
That's so
So we just hung out. And then so we had this party together. And he loves like chips and guacamole. He loves Mexican food. And he invited a ton of people. It was like Edgar Wright and Eli and like all these famous people. And then some people that had worked with him like at his production company. And I had like 5 of my friends. And we all got fairly hammered. And he took off and went to the next bar. And then the bill came and nobody paid. and the bill came to me because I made the reservation thinking we were all gonna, like, everybody would throw in money and like pay for stuff, and they just must have assumed oh, it's Quentin's party, he's got it. And he was Hammertown and he took off to the Cat and the Fiddle, and I was like, oh my God, how am I going to pay for this bill? It was thousands of dollars.
What did you do?
I put down my credit card and begged my friends to give me their debit cards and pray that I'll pay you back at some point. And everybody was like, I don't know if my card has enough to pay. Like, it was like $200, $300, $100, $50, $80. It was like everyone begging my friends, like, please. And I didn't have a lot of money then at all. But I was like, okay, at some point, this is going to come back to me. And then I thought, you know, I'll just write it off. Like, what was I going to do? I drained my bank account paying for this dinner for everybody who just assumed that QT would pick up the tab.
Yeah.
And I never said anything. And everyone, even afterwards, were like, why didn't you tell him? Like, call him and tell him. Dude, your friends bailed and I paid for it. Like, the guy just spent like $15,000 on shit for me. I'm not going to call him and be like, can you give me that $3,000 I paid for your friends to have, you know,
tortillas. In fairness, I mean, he ruined your shit.
Like, I know. But I mean, they were like, you know, $50 Macy's fucking boots, and I got like Louboutins and Givenchy shoes. Like, I still have them in the box. I mean, I wore them, but and they're a size and a half too small thanks to having kids, but I'll never get rid of them.
No.
White patent leather with gold. And
nice.
It was awesome. So long story short, now that I made the short story long, so we became friends and hadn't talked for many years, and every once in a while, he'd email me or I'd email him. And then I heard that he was – okay, I was supposed to do Django. I was going to come in for an audition for this little role, and then they ended up just giving me the role. And the movie got pushed so much because they were filming where we were filming. We did Hatchet remember the set was there, and it was just like sitting there. So they ended up writing that role out. So it was supposed to play like a school marm or something. So I didn't end up getting to do it. And then this movie came around and I was just like, fuck it, I'll just email him. So I just emailed him just saying like, hey, and he still has an AOL address. Like, he's that old school.
So do I.
It's amazing. I do too, but I don't use mine.
I just upgraded my Gmail. Did you notice that?
So funny. We're so old. So I emailed him and said, hey, I'm thinking about you. I know you're doing a movie and I know it's about the Manson girls. And I would love to do it. You know, I would fucking kill it. So let me know. You know, I hope you're well. I'll miss you. But he calls me La Petite Femme. So that was it. Never heard anything. A couple months went by. They started casting. I'm seeing all these big stars. I'm like, holy shit, this is a really big fucking movie.
Yeah.
So I'm like, okay, I'll just do it again. So I just email him again thinking, what do I have to lose? You know, I never ask for jobs. Emailed him again saying, just checking in. Congrats on getting Brad Pitt and Leo. That's fucking awesome. I'm still here. I would literally do craft service. Mm-hmm. Like anything. Yeah. Anything. Just let me know. Don't hear anything. I'm 5 months pregnant. I'm in Florida on vacation. And my agent calls and says, you have a work session with Quentin tomorrow for the movie. And I was like, wait, what? He goes, yeah, but you obviously can't go in because you're pregnant and they want to book you for 6 months. They don't know when they're going to use you within the 6 month time period. I was like, oh my God, you're kidding me. So I email him saying, of course, the one time you want me to come in. I'm barefoot and fucking pregnant. And then he wrote me back saying, you know, no big deal. Like, we'll get you on the next or something. And I said, but hey, you know, in real life, there were a lot of Manson family girls that were really pregnant.
Sure.
So I would do anything for the movie. If it's not this particular role, I would do something else.
Do you know what the role was?
I think it might have been Gypsy.
Uh-huh.
But who was played by Lena.
Yep.
But I'm not 100% sure, you know, what his thoughts were because he had every girl that was coming in to read for Kitty Cat and Pussycat, which were Dakota's role and then Margaret's role.
Mm-hmm.
So every female character were only getting those sides.
Oh,
and then he was figuring out where to put you based on that because nobody got the script. So that was all. I hadn't heard anything. And then he didn't, you know, respond back. He did. He wrote, who's the lucky bastard who gets to have a baby with Danielle Harris? That's what he wrote back. And then when I got back.
Been like, surprise, it's yours. Yeah. Lead part.
You.
Then when I went back to LA, wasn't thinking anything of it. And then they called and said, okay, he wants you to come in anyway. So, but you have to come down, sign an NDA and da 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 da, da and you get your sides. And then it was like, we don't know when we're going to call you in, but they wanted to see how big I was. And I was like, I'm
pretty big, you guys. That was 6 months now at this point. I was like, I don't really know if this is going to work, you know. And then time went on. I didn't get to go in. I was like, oh, my God. Then I started going, please, God, just give me something. Don't make me audition for you because I'm going to freak out. I'm going to do bad. I'm not going to do good in the room.
Yeah, just
give me something. Yeah. Just offer me something. I'm better on set, you know.
Yeah.
And then the next thing you know, they said, okay, you come in for a fitting. You're going to be in the Manson family, but we don't have a name for you. So I went in into wardrobe like, I don't know what I'm doing. Like, did he tell you what I'm doing? Do you have like a scene? Do you know any lines? Like, and they were like, you're just pregnant Manson girl. And I was like, oh, okay. But I had all this wardrobe and I'm like, they're making a big deal out of it. I don't really know. Then they wanted me to, then I had to come down for a test where they did like test shots where they do like wardrobe and makeup and like they did everything and they take photos. So it was me, Dakota, and Lena, and then two guys. And we were all doing like a photo shoot in wardrobe and makeup. And I thought, oh, this is kind of a big deal. Still had no idea what the fuck I was going to do in the movie. And then got to set and still had no idea what the fuck I was going to do. And I was like, can I have a script? They were like, nope. You're just going to go to set. So he came. They gave me – Quentin wrote the scene on a piece of loose leaf paper, and it came in his writing in my – which I have saved in there. And I only two scenes, you know. And then he's like, okay, you're going to do this, and, you know, I'm going to call you Angel, and you're going to walk across. And he mocked me and did this really funny – I think I showed you where he was, like, pretending to be pregnant, like, walking across the room. And everybody started doing it. And I said, I have to just be out by October 3rd because it's when I was going to give birth. And they booked me till October 2nd. This is just, I was like, oh, my God, if I have this baby on set, I'm going to die.
I'm willing to bet that secretly Quentin Tarantino. He 100% wanted you to give birth.
He wanted to film that.
Yeah.
And he's smart.
Or just I would have died.
Amazing.
Like, to have the story of that.
I did not need that story.
No, but he did. And we need it as a nation, Danielle.
Oh, my God.
We need you to get pregnant again, go on another Quentin Tarantino movie.
And we're all going to come with you.
I will be your birth ladies, like a man person.
Deliver it.
Oh, yeah. No.
This is fantastic. I have to say, when I saw it, I was actually really happy because I felt a little stupid only having one scene. You know, I was like, oh, I'm basically an extra. And, you know, don't blink, you'll miss me. And then when I saw it, I saw that all of the celebrity people or people that he brought in really only had one scene or two scenes. So I kind of felt like, wow,
when we
went
and saw the movie, Susan and I, we were like, well, she downplayed it quite a bit.
Yeah.
She said, I'm barely in it.
I mean, yes,
but it was still.
But everybody was kind of barely in it.
Good scene.
Regardless.
It's Quentin Tarantino.
I know.
Such now. I mean, forever pop culture, like,
and the baby's in my belly. Like, I have him on film, and I get to work with him, and I always wanted to. And the fact that he like had loyalty, like I asked him, and he was like, "I'm gonna find something for you," and wrote me something. Like, he doesn't have to do that. Who the fuck am I? You know, he's like,
sure,
like holy crap.
And that's a kind of a question that I always want to ask you guys about. Is like, is there too much to ask for what you want? Like, you know, is that weird to write to somebody? I don't think it is. It never really works out for me. But
I always am scared too, but I've started to change my tune a little bit.
I feel like, you know, it's kind of like the answer's always no if you don't.
Well, that's how I met Adam Green. I was a huge Adam Green fan. I did not know him. I know you're all friends with him. And years ago, I saw him at a convention and I said, I have to meet him. And I ran up to him. Hi, so nice to meet you. And left.
And he probably was geeking out about you, right?
The next month, he asked me to be on Scary Sleepover. And then Victor Crowley, he wrote the part. And I still see him. And I'm like, so I think it's a good thing. Always reach for your dreams.
I just talked to Darren Bousman when I saw he was doing Saw, and I was like, with Chris Rock, and I messaged him on Facebook. I was like, dude, please, anything. You have to, like, give me anything. Yeah. And so I think you get to where you're like, fuck it. What's the worst that could happen? They're like, I can't believe she's asking to work with me.
Yeah.
Right. It's so great. That means you have a lot of love for them.
And at the end of the day, I mean, like, how many people ask people for jobs all the time? I mean, that's how you get work. Life. And even in the real world, it's like you hear somebody who's, you know, needs a banker position. Yeah. If you're a banker, you're like, hey, you know,
hey, I'm here because you texted me.
Yeah.
I guess it's right. It depends on how well you know the person too, of course.
That's true. Sure.
But I mean, I hear about it all the time though, especially now with so much social media stuff. Like a guy who was Adam Rifkin's assistant because he was a fan via Twitter and such a big fan and supporter, became assistant, and then ended up co-writing a bunch of movies with him.
Hey, listen to this. One of the girls that was in the Manson, in the movie, played one of the Manson girls, didn't have a speaking role, but she was in a chunk of it. The way she got the role was she messaged Quentin on Facebook, being a fan,
yeah,
and said, I want to do this. And they went out and had ice cream.
Was it one at Parker and Candace Bowling?
I don't know, maybe.
It's my phone. Well,
they like their big parts, we'll like their Manson girls, and like they're in like every shot of that.
It might have been one of them.
Because they
is it Candace Bowling?
That's what I said. Is it Candace Bowling?
It might have been. No, it wasn't. It was not. It was another one because she had said something like, "I wasn't really sure if I wanted to do it because I knew I didn't have it." And I was like, "Well, what?
Wanted to do it?"
Yeah, she's like, "Well, because I knew I didn't have a speaking role." And I was like, "Dude, are you kidding me? Like,
okay, note to Quentin Tarantino. I don't want to speak. I don't even want to see. I want you to like take my eyes out. I don't have to see anything. Oh, I just want to be there.
I would do craft service. Yeah, I would like. So I would feed people.
I would. Do
I just
want
to be part of something that he's there because it's so cool to see how he works.
Legendary.
You know?
I'd bring you coffee. You
Yeah. Well, so you never know. You could hit up someone that doesn't know you.
I think it's a good thing.
I worked with them on Four Rooms way back with Rodriguez.
I love that movie. Yeah.
Did you?
But I didn't do too much.
No.
Why are you smiling?
Because
you got to hit him up on Facebook.
Since it's all of us in the room.
There's a lot of us in this room from Hatchet. You know, a lot of 7-year-old insomniacs that need to be killed. I'm not one of them.
Wait, what's going on with the axes?
It concludes the episode. Somebody has to die on every episode.
We want to see Danielle take a weapon. So that we
Danielle needs to take a weapon.
Oh,
take
I don't weapon. Have one, so what does that mean?
You have the little
axe.
Have
a little baby axe. Little baby axe to go with the werewolf penis. And we're going to kill Kane Hodder.
No! Fucking got me again.
Casualty Friday is a Fangoria Podcast Network original, hosted and produced by Tiffany Shepis, Felissa Rose, and Kane Hodder. Executive producers Dallas Sanye, Phil Nobile Jr., Matt Mandarides, and Justin Martel. Produced by Natasha Pasetta. Associate producer Jessica Safa-Vamere. Art and design by Jason Koslerich. Sound recording and mixing by Ernesto Hurtado at Rebel Talk Network in Los Angeles. Music by John Brennan. For Fangoria, Brandon Wynardi, Rachel Wilson, Brandon Jones, Rob Galuzzo, James Wallace, Monique Jacques, and Anthony Bonds.